Hello and welcome to the Paddock Bees podcast. I'm Tim Nash, a beekeeper always wanting to learn more and also the man behind the Paddock Bees account on Instagram. This is a podcast for those who've fallen into the beekeeping trap and want to learn a little bit more from the beekeeping community. Each week, we'll mix up the guests and provide some insights into the world of beekeeping. So sit tight and we'll soon make a start. Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Paddock Bees podcast. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Anita, also known as the Wandering Beekeeper on Instagram, where we can follow her beekeeping journey with her Surrey and Swedish-based bees. I know Anita has a few changes planned for this season, and I'm excited to hear about them. So let's get started. Anita, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me.
Following the same pattern as other episodes, let's go back to the beginning. When did you start beekeeping and what got you initially interested in keeping bees?
I feel a slight fraud for being invited to talk here because I have only been a beekeeper for one season. So I'm very, very new to this, but absolutely love it and feel like I have been doing it forever. And I think it's because I've always wanted to do it. I'm an ecologist by profession and I've worked with insects a lot. And as a child, I would collect worms and snails and camp in my garden all summer. So the natural world has always been very special to me and I've just always wanted to keep bees. I think I've also been born in the wrong century. I would love to just live in a shed in a field and keep chickens and grow my own food. So I'm a very simple living type of person and bees just seem to fit in with all of that, and it's something that I've always wanted to do, so I'm delighted that now I'm doing it. Really, really happy to be part of it all.
One season in, what's your current colony count? How many have you got?
Well, I went in, I did a beekeeping course. Before I'd even started the course, I had ordered three hives and three colonies of bees, so I knew. I didn't even give myself the chance to not think that it would be okay for me. I thought, no, this is it. I'm doing this. I'm ordering the bees and I haven't even done the course. So I started with three colonies and all my colonies have made it through the winter and I've got seven at the moment. And hopefully I'm aiming to get up to see how this year goes, but I'm aiming to increase a little bit during the rest of this year too.
That's quite an accomplishment. Sit one season down and you're up but, to seven colonies already.
I don't know if it's an accomplishment, Tim, or whether it's born out of naivety. I think is what you'll find. When I turned up to the beekeeping course, I think most people were very surprised because everybody else on the course was just sitting there with their pens poised and 6 weeks later ordered their hives, whereas I went in and on my first lesson collected all of my belongings. So yes, it was all born out of total naivety. But I thought, you know, if I'm going to do one, I may as well do two. And then I thought, oh, I may as well have three. I don't know. But I mean, I've really thoroughly enjoyed it, and I seem so far to be okay at it, so we shall see how it progresses.
You purchased three colonies, you said, ended up with seven. How did you get those extra colonies? Was that splitting the colonies that you had, or was that swarms?
It was both. It was splits and swarms, which again was a naive thing. The first we had our bee group have a WhatsApp group. And the first swarm that came up in my area, I put my hand up and said, yes, I'll go, having absolutely no experience of the swarm collecting at all. But I thought, I can watch a YouTube video and I can read a book quickly. So that's what I did. I went out and collected. It was a very tiny swarm on a fence post in some stables. And so it was a nice, easy one to start with. So I've had a couple of swarms and then split a couple of colonies as well.
I was going to say that's quite brave, throwing your hat in the ring, not really knowing what sort of swarm you're signing up to go and collect, because you can have the nice low hanging ones on a branch and you just shake them in and that's nice and easy, but there's definitely some more complicated ones out there,
I
so you
did, I
lucked
did.
out there.
Yes, I did. And then the next one, I had been driving past on in my local village, and there was a swarm on the side of the hairdressers, and I kept driving past it, and thought, it's still there, it's still there. I said to him, I've got a little boy who's 7. We were sitting here one evening, and I kept thinking about the bees on the wall, and I said, come on, let's go and get them. Oh no, mummy, no. And so we went down to the village, took some step ladders, put on bee suits and swept them up the wall. And that was good because we had an audience for that one. All the people shopping in the village stood around and watched, so that was quite entertaining as well.
Those are the ones that make me nervous. At least when no one's around, you don't have to worry about them actually stinging someone. It's when people stop to have a look. You can give them all the warnings that you want, but you
No,
can't
no,
control the
no.
bees. They'll still do what they want to do.
Yeah, it was fun. And then the good thing about that was you could then the people were really interested, and I've on social media and things that swarm is now called the Farncombe Swarm, and I update people about that, and it's got me some good customers actually.
And has it not also got you a new polyhive? Is
It
that the same
is.
swarm
It
that we're
is.
talking about?
It's that swarm that once I got them home, and I had them. They were only a tiny swarm, and I put them in a nuc box, and left them for a few weeks. And then I thought, I'll just check to see if there's a queen laying, and opened it up, took the first frame out, and saw the two there were two bees on the top of the frame, and they were in the process of making comb, and I couldn't believe my eyes. The wax was coming out of the glands, and I've just grabbed my phone, which is just a rubbish mobile phone, and it's actually got a cracked screen. Took two pictures, and when I looked at them, it was the most amazing picture I've ever seen. And I thought, my goodness, how have I managed to do that? And happened that month had my copy of Beecraft magazine that I was reading, and there was a photograph of the month competition. I thought, and this is not me, I don't enter competitions, but I just thought, oh, I'm going to send that picture in, because I was so amazed that I had first of all seen the bees producing wax, and secondly taken such a good picture with just my phone really. And submitted the photograph, and a few months later got an email to say that I was the overall winner of photograph of the month. So yes, I had my photograph published in Beecraft magazine, and won myself a brand new polyhive, which is very exciting.
It is a fantastic picture. For anyone who hasn't seen it in Beecraft or on social media, do head over to Instagram and have a look at it. It's really impressive. So that's at least one polyhive you've got. What about the other six colonies? What are
They
they all
are
housed in?
in nationals, in wooden national hives. So yes, I haven't ventured in, well, not yet, that this is my plan for this season, but I haven't so far ventured into, well, there hasn't been much time, to be honest, Tim, in one season. So I've just had, yes, I've got Wooden Nationals.
What's behind the name, The Wandering Beekeeper? Where did that come from, wandering piece?
It was funny because I knew I wanted to, you know, to have a little business, and thought, well, what can it be called? And usually in that type of situation, you know, you sit there with a pen and you write a million names down and can never decide. But I went for a walk, and I was walking through a cow field at the time, and it just suddenly came to me, because I thought, oh, I'm having a, you know, going for a nice wander, and I thought, oh, the wandering beekeeper, because I imagined that I would have hives in, I don't have a big garden, so I couldn't keep hives in my garden, so I have to look for kind people that offer me pieces of land and you know, scatter my hives around. And I just picture myself, I have a very like romantic, vivid imagination, but I kind of picture myself in a flowery dress, skipping through the meadows, visiting, you know, wandering through the meadows and visiting all my beehives. So that's where it came from.
I thought it might have been something to do with the Swedish bees,
yes,
that sometimes appear on your Instagram.
Yes, there's that as well. I do have, although that's starting to become a bit of a problem, what with the you know, our current pandemic situation, but I have a share in a small cabin in Sweden, and I have three hives there, and the person that I share the cabin with is a beekeeper who's been a beekeeper for since he was a little boy. He's been a beekeeper for 40 years, and he's actually third generation. So his grandfather and great-grandfather were beekeepers. And so the equipment that we have and we use in Sweden is ancient equipment, which is fantastic. The frames are square frames, and they're much bigger than the frames that I use here. And yeah, so that and they're situated, the cabin is in a forest. So it's a very different environment to hear. So and that's really interesting, the contrast. The Swedish days are much longer in the summer, but the season is shorter, and then obviously this winter has been extremely cold and snowy, and the difference in the honey that's produced. So yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to have that contrast. So yes, I have been wandering to Sweden, but that's looking, it's getting harder and harder at the moment. I haven't been over now since the beginning of August last year, and it doesn't look like I'm going to get over there this year. I don't know when, you know, when we're going to be able to travel again. So, but the bees over there are fine. They're being looked after, and they're quite happy. They're just coming out now. Over in Sweden, the crocuses have just come out, and the snowdrops are just coming out. So over there, the bees are, you know, a month or so behind my bees in the south of England. So that's interesting as well.
Yeah, it really is. I was going to ask about the equipment and whether there's any consistency with what we might have and use over here relative to what they would be using over there. Yes. But it all sounds quite
old.
Well,
this is it. I don't know in terms of you know, modern Swedish beekeeping, but because this is a third generation beekeeper that doesn't like to throw things away, we are using the great grandfather's equipment still, which is lovely, because it's been you know, in the family for generations, and it's a lovely thing to still be able to use, you know, this old equipment. And when the room that the honey is processed in is the room that my friend's grandfather used, and yeah, it's lovely. It's very traditional, very old fashioned, and very just very simple, which is what I like, just simple and very natural.
So you've had a pretty eventful first season. You started off with the three colonies, you got up to seven, a number of splits and swarms in there. What do you most enjoy about your beekeeping?
I love just being with the bees. I like sitting, you know, like most of us, I think I do. I could just sit and watch them for hours, and quite often do. I can just sit and just watch them coming and going. I mean, at the moment, every time the sun has come out recently, I say to my son, "Should we go and have a look at the bees?" And just sit by the entrance of them and watching. I'm fascinated by the pollen. And at the moment, they're just bringing in so much pollen. And I love seeing where that comes from. So I like to try and follow them and find out where they're foraging. And again, I can spend hours trying to take photographs of them doing that. I find that really lovely, just to stand and watch them foraging and to take a good picture if I can. But I could stand there for hours doing that. And I think the fact that it's so, I know other people have said this, but it's a very mindful experience, that you are totally absorbed in it. You know, you're just there in that moment, and there's something, I think, something very special about that, very grounding and relaxing.
Couldn't agree more. I've definitely said it on a number of other episodes, that element of just focusing on that nature at work to take you away from whatever issues are filling your head and whatever else is on your mind, just being able to do that and to have
yeah,
that,
it's lovely. And I love the smell. Do you love the smell? Just it's just so lovely.
Yeah. For I'm chuckling because the non beekeepers are like, the smell. What do you mean the smell? I think if you've been a beekeeper and you're around hives, you know the smell. But if you're not a beekeeper, you're like, what a bunch of interesting people talking about smelly beehives. Turning that question on its head, what do you dislike most about beekeeping?
Dislikes. Well, I'm very kind of, I like natural living, and I've the bee course that I attended, you know, was very conventional bee course, and because of my background in ecology and because I'm very nature orientated, there's some aspects of conventional beekeeping which I'm quite uncomfortable with. And I think, I'm not sure I want to do that. I'm not sure I like the idea of that. So I don't, you know, I don't use chemicals in my home. So I'm kind of very chemical free person. And so in terms of things like varroa control, I don't like using chemicals. So that was a massive dilemma for me this season, because my bee group were saying, this is what you need to do this and this, and I thought, oh no, I don't want to do that. And it's difficult as well, because not having, you know, I don't have experience, but you know, so but at the same time, I don't want to feel, I don't want to be pushed into doing things by people who are experienced, into doing things that I'm not comfortable with personally. So that was a bit difficult this season, and I actually had to leave the bee group's apiary because of it. So there's other aspects as well. So this year I'm kind of exploring. I've been reading a lot of books, and this year I'm going to explore some alternative strategies, I think, to my beekeeping, and see where that takes me. I did this summer attend a sustainable beekeeping workshop, which was very interesting. That was good. So I've got some ideas there. So yes, that's you know, just some of the conventional things. I just think, some things that don't sit well with me. So I'm going to see what, you know, if I can do anything that I'm more comfortable with.
Some of the listeners out there just might want a bit of a reminder. Varroa is a mite that beekeepers always keep an eye out for and try and do their best to reduce the volume of mites in the colony, because it can be pretty detrimental and in some instances wipe out a colony. And the conventional methodology would be to treat those mites in the autumn, and then probably again between Christmas and New Year when there's no brood that could be impacted. And interestingly, when you and I were messaging before, you did say that you were looking at a different method of varroa control, and it was it the bee gym that you were going to try out?
Yes, I've got a number of bee gyms just to try, and I'm going to try and, you know, do it properly, so in a proper controlled way, and try and be as scientific about it as I can. So that will be interesting, and see. And the other thing I'm going to do this season, I don't know whether most people are aware of him or not, Tim Rowe and his Rose Hive Method. Have you read his book?
I've not read his book, but I did do some reading up on his approach. I say reading up, I probably watched a YouTube video.
So that was with my B group. There were messages go backwards and forwards, and I did a little breakaway conversation with somebody, and he told me about Tim Rowe and said about, you know, there's these rose hives, and he said there's a book and it's very good, and I bought the book and read it, and there was a lot that Tim Rowe said that struck a chord with me. He talks about reducing the amount of stress that we can put on our bees, and working with the bees to help them do what they want to do. So, and I thought, oh, this sounds good. This sounds like very, a natural way. So I have been building rose hives myself. And actually where I'm sitting now in my lounge, I'm surrounded with pieces of plywood, lots of them. And I've built 7 boxes so far. So the rose hive method, for people that don't know about it, it works on the principle that all of the boxes that the bees utilize are all the same size. So rather having a brood box with brood frames of a certain size, and then the smaller super boxes and super frames, his idea is that all the boxes and all of the frames are all of the same size, so everything is interchangeable, and there are no queen excluders, and the queen and the bees can go where they want to. And I just thought, you know, people could be rolling their eyes at me right this moment as I'm saying this, but it just, for me, I thought, oh, this is interesting, this sounds good to me. So I thought I would give it a go this season. So I'm hoping I've made my boxes, or I'm in the process of making my boxes, and then I'm hoping that the first swarm that comes along, I will be the person there collecting it, and we'll just see how it goes. I'm going to give it a go and see what happens. It will be interesting.
I'd be really interested to hear how that goes and how you get on, and see whether you identify any change in those bees. One thing I wanted to do is just clarify what a bee gym is. There might be a few people thinking that you've just thrown in a bee treadmill, a few free weights for the gyms. What is a bee gym? What? How does it work? What's the intention?
I don't know at this moment, Tim. That's something that I'm going to be investigating, because I don't know how they work either at the moment. I think it's a way that the bees, they use it to remove the varroa themselves.
I think they go and, like you said, try and dislodge some of the mites. And yeah, again, It'll be interesting to see what impact that has, because as beekeepers, we can monitor, if you have an open mesh floor, monitor the number of mites falling through that floor and seeing what the impact is there. But it sounds like you've got a really fascinating season coming up. And I think as beekeepers, we can all be very quick to have our own preference. But credit to you for wanting to go down this route of the type of husbandry that you are. I can totally see why you would want to do that. We've spoken a lot over this podcast about mindfulness and nature and that being the focus. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that taking it one step further and making sure you're not using some of those chemicals. There will be some people that would probably counter that and say they're naturally occurring chemicals in an environment, not to the levels that I think we would probably be treating the bees with. I'm no scientist, but
and yeah, the other thing I want to try and do as well along the same lines is to get away from, I mean, this season I fed my bees with sugar syrup. Next year, or this season coming, I'm going to try and get away from that and see if I can leave them with their own honey stores and not take off all their honey from them, and see if, so that so I'm not feeding them anything artificial. And I feel quite nervous about that, because I don't want anything to die. And you know, there's you know, from being part of a, you know, very conventional bee group, the messages are coming out, you know, it's going to be cold this week, make sure your bees have got enough food, la la la. And I, you know, I have gut instinct and my intuition, but then that's also, I do get, you know, I also feel the pressure from people who do know, you know, who have been doing this for a long time. And I don't want any, you know, I don't want my bees to die. But at the same time, I think I'm not comfortable with the sugar thing either. So I'm going to work on that this season as well, and see, you know, at the end of the season where we are, and if I can leave them with enough of their own honey to sustain themselves throughout the winter. So that, you know, that's another thing in my mind.
With that, you would always have the backstop, though, wouldn't you? The intention is to very much leave them with their own honey, and you get different strains of bees, and that some absolute gorge and some won't. And the term hefting a beehive, which is effectively just taking the weight of it to try and feel the difference in weights, and having different colonies, you can feel how much is stored and how light some of the others are. And I suppose, yeah, that is always a backstop. But like I was saying, everyone has their own approach to husbandry. And whether it's that bee group, you could talk to three other beekeepers and they would be total advocates for some of the decisions that you are making. So with anyone trying things out, it's do your research and think about why you want to do something, why you want to make that change. What are you trying to achieve by doing that? And then from there, like we've said before, you ask three beekeepers the same question, you'll get five answers. There's never going to be one right
answer. Yes, I guess it's what you're comfortable with and what works for you. You know, what, because when you were saying about the hefting just a moment ago, when you have no experience like myself, or very limited experience, I've been hefting my hives, but I have no comparison, because last year I didn't do this. So I think, well, that's really heavy, but I don't know if that's heavy enough. Or so, you know, it's interesting, and I think I'm going to have an open mind about it. Try these things, because they sit, you know, they fit in with me and the way I like to live. But also keep an open mind and just see what happens.
First season of beekeeping down, what's been your best story or experience so far?
I think winning the photography competition was quite good. My worst moment in terms of stories was, and again, this is through lack of experience and naivety, when I removed my honey, I left my supers in the garden with the frames in, and I was in the kitchen and I thought, what's that noise? And so I can hear a really loud buzzing noise. What's that? And my neighbor over the road keeps bees, and he had 6 colonies last year. And I looked out of the window, and I think all 6 colonies of his bees had smelt my empty honey supers. And I can't tell you, Tim, what my garden looked like. I had millions of his bees all in my garden, all in the boxes. It was horrendous. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. And I had my neighbours phoning up saying, what have you done to us? What have you done to us? There's bees everywhere. So that was quite it's an amusing story when you look back at it. But at the time, I had no idea what to do. I was just standing there with millions of them flying around.
I don't think there is much you can do at that point, to be honest.
It was
just
awful.
Ride it out.
Come the evening, it will be fine. They'll all go. And then in the end, actually, I tried to do something about it, because I'm one of these people, I can't bear if anybody's cross with me. So as soon as my neighbours were phoning up, you know, quite angry, I thought, I'll try and do something about it. I'll see if I can get some of the boxes inside. So I had my bee suit on, and because I thought, well, at least if they're in my house, it won't bother my neighbours. So I actually ended up transferring a few thousand of the bees into my bathrooms downstairs, and I had them all in the bathroom. So we ended up with a bathroom with about, I don't know, 2,000 bees buzzing around. It was awful.
You are braver than I am. I think I might have just got the hose out.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I just thought, no, let's get them inside and away from the neighbours. So then me and my son had bees in the bathroom, and I just had to say to him, just be careful when you go to the toilet.
Going to sleep in your bee suit this evening. Based on the season that you've had, what would your bit of advice be for other people looking to get into beekeeping or starting out this season?
Don't hold back. You know, it's such a fantastic thing. And, you know, I think if you're starting out, enjoy it, and don't try and cut corners and not wear your bee suit to do something simple, I think, as well, because you will get stung. And definitely remember that when you take your honey supers off, do not leave any unattended frames in the back garden, because local bees will sniff them out.
Some sound advice there. Later in the season, hopefully there'll be a honey crop. Where will people be able to buy your honey from?
I sell it locally, so I always put it on my local community board and on the social media site. And yes, so people come, and it's lovely actually, because my local community have got to know me now, and people come and knock at the door, and I've made a little sign when the honey was available, and it's really lovely. I've met some really, really nice people. And then I have started to produce a website to try and, you know, do things in a, you know, on a wider scale. I'm a bit slow at that kind of thing, but I have lots of plans for the future. And but yes, at the moment, locally, people can just come and knock on my door. It's nice to meet people. I like chatting to them, and everybody's fascinated about bees, aren't they? Everybody loves them.
Yeah, they really are. I think I've got a number of neighbours who want to come and have a look. I sprung it on them on a WhatsApp chat last year saying, by the way, who wants to buy some honey? I've got some hives in the garden. I was one of those individuals that get the hives in the garden and then tell people rather than do the whole consultation. So as we think about coming to wrap this episode up, as always, we want to focus on jobs for the week. The bees are being a bit more active now. There's a bit more going on.
What are your jobs going to be this week? I'm leaving my bees well alone. I'm not interfering with them. I'm just leaving them to it. I'm staring at them a lot and watching them, but that's all I'm doing. But I am, because I can see as soon as the season starts, you know, you kind of have to hit the ground running. So I'm just making sure that I'm on top of everything, and I'm painting hives and making up frames ready to go, and getting all of my equipment. I tidied my shed this weekend. I'm just getting all my equipment and all of my frames in an orderly fashion so that I'm organised, because once the season starts, it can very quickly, can't it? Just very quickly get out of control. And if I've got that many more colonies than I had last year, I can just see that it could probably get quite chaotic. So I'm just trying my hardest to be on top of things right at the beginning of the season. So there's, at the moment in the kitchen, I'm now looking at 3 roofs, 3 floors, some stands and a tin of paint on the floor. So beehive material everywhere in my house.
I managed to limit mine to the garage, but there's always the odd bit which ventures inside. But Mrs. Nash swiftly makes me take that back to where it belongs. And yeah, it's doing the inventory check to make sure, right, yes, if I'm doing all of these splits, how many extra queen excluders am I going to need? How have I got everything that I need? And this is the plan for the season. It's never going to go to plan, but let's just make sure that I've got enough of everything if it does go to plan. Well, Anita, I've really enjoyed having this conversation, and I'm really excited to hear how your season goes. Obviously, implementing a couple of those other methods, the bee gym and chemical free, and looking at the rose hives. Yeah, I'd be really interested to find out at the end of the season how that's all gone for you in comparison to the more traditional colonies in the hives that you've got. So thanks again for joining.
And thank you for having me, and have a great season, everybody.
All right, everyone, thanks for taking the time to join me today for the Paddock Bees podcast. I really hope you found it useful. I'd love for you to come back and give me some feedback, so head over to Instagram and send me a direct message, or email me on paddockbees@gmail.com. I want to hear from you. I want to know what you want to hear about. So please don't hesitate to give me your thoughts. Once again, thanks for joining. See you next time. Bye.